Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. By the way, some of you may be interested in my Wednesday night television show where web video meets the issues. Tonight's videos include one showing an unusual New York vending machine that sells bicycle accessories. That's tonight at 7:30 on CUNY TV, Channel 75 on the New York City cable systems. Well, getting a job can be stressful for anyone, but it can be especially difficult when your identity and appearance can turn off potential employers before they even look at your resume. Transgendered individuals, those who identify with a different sex from the one they were born with, report high rates of discrimination on the job. Make the Road New York, the activist group, recently investigated this type of discrimination and found that many of the city's biggest retailers, they cited J. Crew, for example, were more likely to reject transgender applicants even when their resumes and backgrounds were the same as those who got job offers. Since 2002, New York City human rights law has prohibited employment discrimination on the basis of gender identity, but hasn't been successful. Columbia Law School professor Kendall Thomas and gender rights advocate Pauline Park join us to discuss transgender rights in New York and beyond. Professor Thomas and Dr. Park, hi. Thanks for coming on today.
Good morning, Brian.
Thank you, Brian.
Pauline, what do the findings in Make the Road New York's report tell us? For example, in their tests, they found that discrimination was 42% higher for transgendered individuals. In a survey, transgendered people reported high levels of job discrimination. What do these numbers tell us?
Well, the report by Make the Road New York simply confirms anecdotal evidence, which is suggests that there is widespread and indeed pervasive discrimination based on gender identity and expression here in New York City and, in fact, throughout the country. We get calls at the Niagara office, New York Association for Gender Rights Advocacy, on a regular basis from people who have been denied jobs, who have had experiences such as the ones that Make the Road discrimination testers have had, people who have perfectly good qualifications who are denied employment simply because of their gender identity or gender presentation.
So, Professor Thomas, in this study, Make the Road focused on 24 retail stores. That's a sector with a lot of customer contact. You think that was to make a point?
I think so. I mean, everybody goes to stores, and it's just unacceptable that transgender persons are not either allowed to work or are harassed at work or fired at work simply for their identity, for reasons that have nothing to do with the quality of their work. And it's important, I think, for those of us who are transgender or who support transgender rights to know that there are places of business in New York State and New York City that we spend our money at that discriminate against our brothers and sisters who are transgender.
Pauline, still thinking about the fact that they went after retail, where presumably people would be working on the floor with customers. On yesterday's show, the segment on ageism and the job hunt, one employer noted that he was happy to hire people of all ages, but the customers complained. So if businesses take an employee's appearance or presentation into account, or the way that employee will be perceived by a customer public, fairly or not, is that completely outside the bounds of the law and of what's right, in your opinion?
Well, there's an important distinction to be made here between two different things. Certainly, employers have the right to demand and insist that employees look professional in their appearance, but to discriminate based on their gender presentation is, in fact, against the law, the transgender rights law that was enacted by the New York City Council in April 2002, 8 years ago. Now, when it comes to customer service, that is a sensitive point, because what really happens when you're dealing either with client relations, such as professionals, such as lawyers and doctors and so forth, deal with, or with customer service, as in retail, employers tend to be ultra-sensitive, oversensitive, really, in many ways, to the question of how transgendered employees will interact with customers and what the reaction of customers may be. And they are especially sensitive to whether or not a transgendered woman appears to be is perceived as a woman by customers, or a trans man is perceived as a man. And any degree of gender transgression or obvious gender variance could provoke some reaction from customers, of course. But just as discrimination based on race, ethnicity, or disability is illegal, so too discrimination based on gender identity or expression is prohibited by law. It doesn't matter if a customer responds negatively because someone is transgendered.
Listeners, any transgendered folks listening right now who have had employment problems, discrimination that you think you were the victim of, or anyone in the hiring sector who has come across a transgendered applicant and had to confront your own biases, perhaps, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. And Professor Thomas, you're a law professor at Columbia. The law that was passed by the New York City Council in 2002, outlawing discrimination on this basis, has it had an impact in any way that's been measured?
Well, I think it's fair to say that the simple presence of the law on the books has made an enormous difference in making transgender people feel as though they can be secure about their rights in the workplace. And the New York City Human Rights Commission is one of the best such agencies in the country. And armed with that law, I'm sure that they have been able to identify and respond to instances of discrimination against transgendered persons.
Let's take a phone call with a story, I think. Diana, you're on WNYC. Hi.
Hi, my name is Diana Montford. I'm a trans activist. I'm 53. I've been trans since 1971 with my parents' encouragement. I do the Diana Montford Show. It's a talk show on Manhattan Neighborhood Network on Thursday evenings, late night at 12:30, and here's my story. Years ago, I was a makeup artist at a department store, and they surmised over time that I was transgendered, and I was fired. Now, this is the makeup department. This is not the sporting goods department. You know, this is very strange that, you know, I mean, it was okay to be a gay guy, and it was okay to be a straight woman or a seemingly straight woman, but it was not okay once they found out I was transgendered to be a male to female transgendered person. I think that's exceedingly unjust, and yes, we did pass the law. I'm one of the people who helped push it through. I was a member of Niagara High, Pauline, and we often they just don't know that this law exists and that it is illegal to discriminate against transgendered folk. And even if they do, they feel that no one is going to enforce the law because we've always been the stepchild of the LGB movement.
Thank you for your call, Diana. And we have a comment, Pauline, coming in from a listener, Sammy in Brooklyn, who writes, while it is no doubt painful for transgender individuals to find themselves screened out of certain jobs, why should there be legal protections for someone's lifestyle choice and personal expression? A male being prohibited from wearing a dress is no different from a woman wearing a dress deemed too short, as defined by the workplace dress code. What do you say to that, listener?
Well, they're totally different. First of all, in the case of a dress too short, that comes under the category of professional appearance. But in terms of transgender identity, we're talking about a gender identity, not a lifestyle choice. For one thing, it's not a lifestyle. And one could argue whether it's a choice or not. But regardless of whether it were a choice, the simple fact is gender identity and expression are prohibited by New York City law, consistent with the standard in many other cities and states. And as long as transgendered individuals meet the professional standards for appearance, consistent with their own gender identity, it is in fact illegal to fire someone or deny someone employment. I would make one or two other quick points. One is the City Human Rights Commission regularly does this kind of discrimination testing for race, ethnicity, disability, etc. I'm not aware of them doing testing specifically for gender identity discrimination, and I think they really should. Under the Bloomberg administration, the City Human Rights Commission has been understaffed and underfunded. The other point I would make is that there is important legislation pending in the City Council, which unfortunately both the mayor and the speaker oppose, which is called the New York City Human Rights Governmental Operations and Audit Law, which is a very long and boring title, but it's a very exciting piece of legislation which would, if enacted, transform the way the City of New York does civil rights from a passive civil rights model to a very active mm-hmm. human rights model.
Right. Let's get another call in here. Lori in Westchester, you're on WNYC. Hi, Lori.
Hi, good morning, everyone. I just wanted to make a comment. I really try not to discriminate, but as a customer, I just wanted to make a comment and perhaps pose the question. I walked into a store, I won't give the name, and there was a transgender male at the cash register. And my daughter and her friend were questioning, is that a man, is that a woman? And it just opens up this whole box. These are young girls. I just wasn't ready to deal with that. I haven't even dealt with sexuality with them. So I think that when we're working, you know, going into stores, working with the transgender population, it brings up issues that I think a lot of parents, perhaps who are conservative, just can't deal with. And I just wondered, you know, how the transgender community views that. Do they understand mm-hmm. that for parents, this poses a very difficult position for us?
Kendall Thomas, what do you say to Lori?
Well, Lori, I think that it's an opportunity for education, and I can understand your reluctance about introducing your children to complex social issues that they may not be able to wrap their minds around, but I think there's a simple way to get across to them that people express their identities in many different ways. Some people like to wear sandals. Some people like to wear tennis shoes. Some people like to wear a certain color or wear their hair a certain way. And the idea, I think, of difference and variety and the fact that there are many different ways
but
for
wait
people
a minute.
To be people
let me jump in.
All children can get.
Well, Pauline was making the point a minute ago that this is not a lifestyle choice in response to the previous commenter. You're making it sound like a lifestyle choice.
Well, gender identity is not a lifestyle choice, but within the framework of a given identity, all of us make personal choices on a daily basis about things like how long or short our hair will be, what color clothes we'll wear. Those sorts of things are part of what it means to be a human being. And I think that one of the things that is most troubling for those of us who are committed to transgender equality is the fact that the simple human being of transgender people is challenged not just in the workplace, but in many different areas of our society.
We're just about out of time. But, Pauline, anything to add to that? Is there kind of a gray area there between lifestyle choice or not?
Not really. I think it's about acceptance of diversity. And it's also about, as Kendall said, educating the public. If you reduce the standard for protection from discrimination to what won't bother people, then why not reduce the standard with regard to race, ethnicity, religion, or disability? Someone might say, well, I don't want my children to have to look at someone in a wheelchair or someone with an obvious disability. Mm-hmm. That's clearly discriminatory and clearly unjust.
Right. Well, Lori in Westchester, are you okay with that standard?
I mean, I understand it. I completely understand it. And I think everyone does have a right to be human and to express that. I still think that it's just difficult. It's very difficult as a parent to just explain all of this because, you know, I want my child maybe, and again, I'm being conservative, to not choose that way if there's such a thing. And maybe I'm wrong about that, listening to the discussion between Pauline and the gentleman.
Thank you for your call. Kendall, 10 seconds. That reminds me a lot
of arguments that used to be made about interracial couples. And people saying, well, one reason I'm opposed to interracial couples is because I don't want my son or daughter to enter one. Therefore, the law ought to forbid them.
And I think that's problematic,
obviously.
Last question, real quick. You know, we've been covering the census extensively on this show, and tomorrow is Census Day, by which time everybody is encouraged to return their forms. And this question came up on the show the other day, and we did not get a clear answer. How do members of the transgender community prefer to fill out the sex question? There is a sex question on the census, simply male or female. Pauline, what's the right answer?
Well, the right answer is that transgendered people can fill out the census sex question however they wish. Right now, the census does not collect data on gender identity or sexual orientation. And while you can extrapolate some information about same-sex couples, you can't actually indicate either your sexual orientation or your gender identity. But the census encourages transgendered people to respond to that question however they identify.
Okay. Pauline Park, Chair and Co-Founder of the New York Association for Gender Rights Advocacy, or NIAGRA, and Kendall Thomas, Law Professor and Director of the Center for the Study of Law and Culture at the Columbia University School of Law. Thank you both for joining us.
Thank you, Brian.
Thank you, Brian.
And coming up, we will close out with a few minutes on living the three-screen life. New survey results on massive media multitasking. So we'll ask what other media you're consuming while listening to this show right now. In fact, you can call up right now and get in line. What other media are you consuming right now while listening to this show? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692.